Hi there, and welcome to this episode of A Couple Takes on MS. Hi, I'm Dan Digman.
And hi, it's me, Jennifer Digman.
And we're A Couple Takes on MS. I'm walking.
I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. And this is a really exciting time of year. Not only is it MS Awareness Month, but we just returned from Washington, D.C. for the National MS Society Public Policy Conference, and we really want to introduce all of you to the issues that we brought up to our U.S. Congress representatives and senators in terms of MS-related issues to help improve the situation of everybody living with this disease. Pretty exciting, right, Jennifer?
Yes, absolutely. We talked about two issues. The first one being prioritize extension and improvement of access to telehealth and co-sponsor the Connect for Health Act.
And then we also talked about to prioritize $20 million for the MS research program in fiscal year 25. And that all sounds pretty heady, but I mean, we want to dive into both of these issues to kind of give everybody out there just like more perspective on what it is were the priorities for us when we, along with almost 200 MS activists nationwide that we talked about on Capitol Hill last week, and how you, the listeners, can get involved as MS activists, advocates, to advocate for yourself or for a family member, loved ones, or the nearly 1 million other Americans who are living with multiple sclerosis. And we will have information about that in the liner notes, or you can always reach out to us. You can email us at acoupletakesonms@gmail.com. Those were pretty big issues and pretty big asks, and it is MS Awareness Month, so let's just touch on that for a second, Jennifer. Happy MS Awareness Month.
And happy MS Awareness Month to you.
Why is that a big deal to you? Why do we even bother with MS Awareness Month? Or do you feel we do this year-round?
Personally, I feel that we do this year-round. We live the disease every day, and I'm sure people listening who are also living with MS, we feel like we live it every day. But this gives us a month where we can really try and share our realities with others. So many of us deal with things we don't want to talk about, or we do occasionally briefly talk about, but to really get into our realities and have a month dedicated to explaining what we're going through, what we're living with, what help we need. And so that's why Public Policy Conference was so empowering. And that's why this month, where we get out our orange and we really bang the drum about life with multiple sclerosis, is important to me. Why is this month important to you?
I think that this gives us the excuse. You know, if we start barking out MS in the middle of August and be like, well, you guys talk about it all the time. Well, March gives us the reason and the springboard impetus to talk about it all the time. And I think that that's just where it gives us the reason. And I think it builds community because everybody in the MS community is out talking about it. And it just raises that awareness and gets more people interested, fires them up to get involved as activists, get them involved in fundraising efforts to raise money for the research, for the programs to help support people with MS. So this is, I don't want to go all like holidays and say it's the most wonderful time of the year, but at the same time, when it comes to MS advocacy, this is the most wonderful time of the year. And so that's my 10 cents worth, more than you asked for. But really then, I want to dig into then the issues and about what we talked about with our legislators. We met with our Congressman John Molinar, aides for our senators, Debbie Stabenow and Gary Peters, as long as meeting face-to-face with two other Congress people in the state of Michigan. We met with Congressman Dan Kildee and Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, and it was just a great conversations. But I really wanted, first and foremost, talk about the issue of prioritizing the extension and improvement of access to telehealth and co-sponsoring legislation. What can you tell listeners about this and why it's important?
Well, I think all of us living with multiple sclerosis, all of us who went through the pandemic, we realize how important telehealth is. Telehealth became an important component of many people's lives, and it was the definition of what it meant to have access to comprehensive, high-quality care. I know, for example, I have a urologist that, sure, she's 45 minutes away, but to have a telehealth visit with her, especially during COVID, when you couldn't see anybody, but now, it's great. Those of us living with MS who have urological problems, to see your doctor as frequently as you may need to. And it's nice. I don't have to drive there and we can do a quick visit. And so I think that just makes it so much easier. And I don't drive anymore. You know, I'm the one who's rolling. And so it's just easy for me. I don't have to get my caregiver or you, babe. You don't have to drive me to a doctor's appointment. I can say to Dr. Witski, I need to meet with you virtually. Let's have a telehealth appointment. And it helps with mental health care, helps with our neurologist. And so I just think that it opens the door for us. And it really helps people. And, you know, like I said, I live 45 minutes from the urologist. Dan and I, our neurologist is 2.5 hours away. So to have a telehealth visit, and when, you know, we're lucky that we have a car that we're able to drive to get to those appointments. But if you don't drive, or if you just, it's just easier if you can't make it to an appointment, just to hop on a phone call. And I know we were watching one of our friends talk about this issue, and she's a very intelligent woman, but she says, as soon as I touch the doorknob to walk into the doctor's office, all my questions, all my cognitive abilities just poof out of my head. But if I'm talking to the doctor virtual, I can have my thoughts and my organization, and it just seems to help her where the quality of her meetings is better. And so for me, telehealth makes all kinds of sense. And so that's, you know, what we were asking. We're asking for our legislators to permanently extend telehealth access for millions of people who, you know, rely on telehealth. And it just really makes it so much more efficient and quality. But that's me. How about you, Dan? What do you think about telehealth?
Well, I think it's genius. I think that if we can talk about benefits, if I can say a benefit of the, or a positive that came out of the pandemic, is how much more reliable and usable and functional telehealth is. Whereas before the pandemic, I was like, oh, you have to come to our office. Well, do you really? I mean, obviously there are times where you need to have that one-on-one, person-to-person, face-to-face meeting with your healthcare provider. However, if you're talking just regular checkups or more impromptu kinds of emergency or quick meetings, it just makes sense. And especially for people who don't have the ability to just get into their van and drive. And I think this is where kind of the best of two worlds or just how everything came all together, because we were at PPC last week talking about the need for telehealth and the beauty of it. And then just yesterday, we were down in Ann Arbor to see our neurologist. And this was the first time since 2019 that we had a face-to-face meeting with our neurologist, Dr. Braley, down at the University of Michigan because of the pandemic. I mean, we saw her virtually a couple, three times, annually throughout that time. But just, you know, in having those visits, I did not need to take time off of work to go to see my neurologist. That was like my lunch hour, see Dr. Braley, whereas yesterday to get down to Ann Arbor, we had to go down, spend the night in the hotel in Ann Arbor so we can make the trip in one day, you know, and not have to do to and from, you know, 2.5 hours, you know, total of 5 hours plus a visit. So it was nice to have that. But at the same time, then yesterday, having that face-to-face meeting with Dr. Braley was very, very, very valuable. But at the same time, you like to have those options, because if I couldn't get away from work, then that would be problematic. So then we would push the telehealth, but I think it's just having that option available.
It's nice how they complement each other, that you could see Dr. Braley. And I remember during the height of the pandemic, we would have virtual meetings and she would watch you walk, you know, granted, it's not the same as in person, but you're just doing your footsteps and you're taking your stride and she's watching and judging that. But then yesterday when we were in person and you walk, she could really see.
She could see the issues.
But that's where they complement each other, because when someone is dealing with illness and they can't get to a doctor's appointment, or if your fatigue is an issue. I mean, Dan, you had to drive. And that's, you know, that's 2.5 hour drive. And then imagine if we did it all in one day, that would be five hours round trip. And what that would do to fatigue. And it's difficult just to do it. So to have that ability, maybe not for every visit, but it is a very, I mean, we opened the box to telehealth, and we can't shove it back. We can't close it. So legislators really need to address this and make this continue.
Absolutely. And I think that's where, you know, what they talked about, just, you know, that since 2020, that Congress and the Trump and Biden administrations both worked and significantly increased access to telehealth by waiving restrictions and broadening which services are offered. And then also then that the telehealth cliff at the end of this year could end the telehealth access that many people on Medicare have come to rely on. And so that's what we're talking about with these issues, is to continue that for Congress to make this stay on board. And so I think it's, I think that, you know, the face-to-face that I had with Dr. Braley, there was so much more, and I think I was maybe a little more prepared, or maybe just things had, for lack of better words, I mean, have gotten worse since I saw her 5 years ago, but just to be able to have that open the door for other conversations. So I think that's just the benefit of telehealth.
Absolutely. And to see her in person, it was interesting always when you and I go, you know, it's Jennifer time for the first 45 minutes, and then it's Dan time. And when you're there, I try and stay quiet and let you and Dr. Braley have your visit. But of course, at the tail end, I had to interject about sleep and how, you know, my baby always looks, you know, he's I don't want to say you're tired all the time.
I am tired all the time.
But you have a lot, you know, you have a full-time job. You're my full-time caregiver, plus you take care of the house and, everything. And so when I mentioned that, Dr. Braley's ears literally like perked up, just like sleep. And that's one of her areas of interest. And so she wants to do some sort of sleep study with you and address that sleep issue. And I think that's really exciting because she is a researcher. That's one of the things that we totally really adore about her, is that she is hip and up to date on the research.
Well, and that is the big thing, because she is so big into the research and sleep study, and sleep is big. I'd read that she had something about test subjects or to be involved in the research, but you know, that was also talking then 3-hour visit in Ann Arbor and then 2 more visits in Ann Arbor over the next 6 months, blah, blah, blah. But to be part of her sleep, the sleep clinic, as it were, I can do all of that virtually. And just that beauty of having that option for virtual meetings and interaction. And that's just all part of her research. And that's, you know, ties in then to the other ask that we had during public policy conferences to prioritize the $20 million for the MS research program for fiscal year 25. And what's beautiful about this, I mean, you know, there's talk about NIH funding and other research funding, but what the MSRP is at the federal level, this is like the only research program that is exclusively for MS research, that is exclusive for MS. And Congress has been very, very, very supportive of this in years past, but we all know, like with the tightening of belts and, you know, government funding and everything, happy to say that this is level funding, so we're not asking for any more this year. But it's, I think what's really nice about this is it's saying that the MSRP has received a total appropriation of $133.3 million since fiscal year 2009. And has funded 208 research awards. And I think that's what's beautiful then, Jennifer, in talking what you did when we were talking to the legislators as far as what research has done for the MS community.
The research is phenomenal. And for me, you know, certainly you can say that since this started in 2009, that was the beginning of the research. Drugs have come to fruition, and you know, there's now medications available to treat more advanced, more the primary progressive forms of the disease. And that's all come through this high risk, high reward funding. But what's really good is that they're actually talking about myelin repair, you know, and just the MSRP gives funding and flexibility to address urgent gaps and novel discoveries that could make an immediate impact on the lives of people affected by MS. Things like neuroprotection, repair and restoring function, lost because of the progression of the disease. And that's pretty amazing to think about myelin repair. And, you know, certainly the funding at the government's important, and we need it. But I don't want people to be sitting there thinking, oh, what does the MS Society do? Well, to date, the National MS Society has funded $1.2 billion with a B in MS research. So when we are walking, when we are biking, when we have fundraisers, the Society is putting their money into this. And so it's, again, that word complement, you know. The society and the federal government are working together to help find treatments to deal with multiple sclerosis, to make the lives of those of us living with the disease better.
And I think that's, you know, as you're talking about the billions, that was everything that's gone into that from the society. And it's just the stats for the MSRP and what it's funded, that it's funded an MSA or an FDA breakthrough device designation for the MS blood biomarker test, but it's also resulted in 11 clinical trials, 253 peer-reviewed journal publications with a total citation of 11,794, and has also led to $45.6 million in follow-up funding for 63 new grants, and has 4 issued patents and 3 patent applications. And I just think that's the dynamics of the research and where it is. And I think research takes so much time and effort, and just how we're getting, you know, the developments, the advancements that, you know, when you talk about that, when we were diagnosed, there were only 3 disease-modifying therapies, and now we are, you know, over 26 in the 25 years.
And what's also exciting is that there's a blood biomarker test that this MSRP funding has gone in to help, a blood biomarker test to predict or assess risk of disability that can be done in an office setting. And it does not require the use of an MRI. And it's, you know, it's certainly less expensive. Anyone who's ever had to pay for their MRI, pay a portion, that's an expensive test. And so this biomarker test would be incredible.
That would be huge.
And then I would be remiss if I didn't point out that this funding is done at the Department of Defense, because there is a link between MS and military service. That, you know, MS has a higher incidence in military service members than the general population.
And that's interesting how that, mm-hmm. you know, what they're seeing with that.
And that the society estimates that nearly 70,000 American veterans live with multiple sclerosis. And that those numbers, you know, that's a population that we have good data on.
Right.
And I would like to know what the connection is, but this multiple sclerosis funding is going to hopefully figure that out. And that's an important piece of the puzzle, is why the military? But then, you know, babe, you and me, why us? And so I just think that the research funding, and knowing that the government's putting money in and the society's putting money in, look at how much progress has happened in the 25 years since we were diagnosed.
And it keeps going, and it's just like it, and it adds. And I think that's the beauty of research. I find it interesting. Then as we were standing in line to get into one of the Senate buildings during the PPC, we were in line in front of the group of like 3 or 4 people from the Traumatic Brain Injury mm-hmm. Association, and just how, you know, they're asking for research funding, but it's like how the brain injury and multiple sclerosis, there's some, you know, overlap within there. And so then it's like, you know, what we find in our research could benefit other, like the brain injury research. And, you know, back, you know.
And certainly things like Parkinson's, lupus, fibromyalgia, you know, this is all research that is being done that hopefully some developments can help with all of these illnesses, these autoimmune illnesses, neurological illnesses. And that's why I think there's so much reason to have hope right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we go to public policy conference and we're surrounded by orange and we're surrounded by fellow activists, people that care about our disease. We meet with members of the government. They care about our issues. And it's motivating and it's encouraging and empowering. And so, yes, I'm tired. We were in Washington, D.C. a week ago. But for as tired as I am, I'm excited. I'm encouraged. I'm hopeful. That's one of those things when you're living with MS. I hope people don't lose hope.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe to know that there are people out there working on treating this disease, finding something to put a stop to multiple sclerosis, and to know that people are looking to improve our lives is helpful when you're feeling hopeless about multiple sclerosis, that it's out there and people are still working to put an end to the disease.
And I think that's what's encouraging. And we will have information on both of these issues in the liner notes for this episode, as well as you can catch up with this on our website, is acoupletakesonms.com. And we'll have information there. And I guess that's the other thing too, everybody out there in listener land, follow up with us, let us know. I mean, so we talked about telehealth and everything. What's your experience been with telehealth in terms of how has it benefited you, and what do you see as the difference? And you can send that to us through our email, is acoupletakesonms@gmail.com. I think that way it continues the conversation, kind of gives everybody else another perspective, and we can share that in the liner, you know, follow up on our blog, on the website, or we can reference it in future episodes of A Couple Takes on MS podcast. And I think at this point, I'm just very encouraged. You talked about the empowering and stuff. What was the best part of the PPC for you? And what gave you the most encouragement moving forward here as we're coming to the end of the episode and moving forward with MS Awareness Month?
For so long, we've talked about a cure. And I'm not to be negative or downplay how incredible a cure would be, but I've wanted a fix.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said I want a fix. And we were at public policy conference and they talked about myelin repair.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my fix. And so for me, you know, not to be cheesy or overdramatic, but I felt like my eyes kind of welly, like, oh my goodness, myelin repair. I still, you know, that just blows my mind. Because I can't imagine what it would be like to someday be able to walk again.
Right.
And I know that that could be a long way away. But, you know, 20 years flew by quick. So in 20 years, what will my future be?
I like that.
So that was for me. But what about for you? What was the moment?
I don't want to be lazy, but you stole my answer. I think that's, but I mean, because seriously, I think that's where we are kind of in the same position, same boat, if you will. Just that I love the research. I love everything. I like when they come out with new disease modifying therapies and things. And as you say, you know, I would love a cure for the disease, but for me, you know, initially high level, cure won't necessarily help me personally that much, because I've had the disease causing 24 years worth of damage internally in my brain and spinal cord, everything. So yes, the sense of a fix, and where there was more talk about a fix, not a disease modifying therapy. And I'm not undermining any of that research. And every time they come out with a new one, it's glorious, but at the same time, I want something that can fix what's already been damaged. So there's that.
So there is that. And it really provided, we had a good visit with our neurologist yesterday, and I don't want to breeze past that.
No.
But it gave us, you know, we were able to talk with Dr. about new treatments, about, you know, different medications. And we had the reassurance from our neurologist that we are doing the best medicine for each one of us to treat our disease. And she talked about the importance of physical therapy and how you and I could both benefit from that. You know, because we are in person and she can see what our weaknesses are. And they're there. And so that's encouraging that we were able to see her and have her say, okay, let's do this moving forward. And she talked about sleep with you and how important it is. And I don't want to say she didn't get through to me too, you know, that we should get more sleep.
6 hours of sleep doesn't cut it when you're living with MS.
No, between, you know, 7 and 9 hours is what doctor recommended, which was like, oh, that's so much sleep. But she just said, and this blew my mind, if we're talking about things that blew my mind. She said, Jennifer, just go to bed 15 minutes earlier and sleep in 15 minutes later. That's 30 minutes more sleep you're getting. And I'm like, oh, wow, doctor, that's pretty easy. So, you know, we're going to try and get more sleep and treat ourselves better. And so that we can continue, you know, taking care of our health and be activists and work on issues important to the MS community.
Amen. So that will do it for us. Thank you all for joining us today. Be sure to check out the liner notes for further information about the MS advocacy, how you can become involved as an activist, and specifics on the issues that we talked about with our legislators. You can do that there in the liner notes, or check it out on our blog. Our website is acoupletakesonms.com. You can also reach us through our email is acoupletakesonms@gmail.com, or you can also reach us on Twitter is @acoupletakesonms, or @acoupletakesonms. There's no A in there. So we have that going for us. Thank you for taking the time to hang out with us today, talking about it. And until next time, we are A Couple Takes on MS. I'm Dan Digman, and I'm walking.
And I'm Jennifer Digman, and I'm rolling.
And we are A Couple Takes on MS. Till next time, take care.